Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between science, religion, philosophy, yoga, all of which are really only aspects of the selfsame quest for truth. Please note, this is an independent program, not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guest is Zabano Gifford. Hello, Zabano.
Hello. Thank you, Jack.
How are you doing?
I've survived the night and I'm here in England. We've had terrible storms.
Oh, that's right.
But the sun is shining now. It's absolutely bright sunlight. So it's beautiful.
Well, they say that the light after the storm is the,
yes.
the peace
yes.
after the storm.
Yes. yes. And I'm so looking out from my sitting room. So the most beautiful view, I think it's about the most beautiful view in England. It's south facing. We've got forests, we've got fields with sheep in it. And on the left-hand side is the River Severn, which is one of the only two rivers in the world that go backwards. Uh-huh. Quite remarkable.
The bore there goes up.
Absolutely, the Severn bore, and it's just there. So I can see it from my sitting room window.
Wonderful. Well, you're going to paint us some pictures today about your history. It's a wonderful heritage you have. We're reading a little bit about it. It goes back all the way back to ancient Persia.
Yes. Well, a minimum 350,000 years. We don't know when our prophet Zoroaster was actually born, but we think it's around then. And to me, he was just a revolutionary, a genius. And what he said is so relevant to us today, even though there's just 100,000 Zoroastrians left in the world. I think we're keeping the flame alive of our faith. And I think it's very important. It gives us guidelines of how we should live today.
Yeah.
And I'm extremely proud to be a Zoroastrian. I just feel it's, people often ask me, what does it mean? And I said, I don't really know, because it's just my DNA. We are spiritual warriors, and we're here to bring happiness to the world and also justice. And it's very simple. I think we complicate life so much. Life is very simple. to live a good life, you have to be kind. You have to protect the environment and beautify it. And you have to make a difference. I think we've forgotten that. We've come here to make a difference. We've come here to bring happiness to the world and to bring change. And we believe that there's a constant battle between good and evil. And we have free will, which is very revolutionary. We don't have to kowtow to anybody. We have to think with our own intellect and our own compassion what is the right thing to do, and then we have to do it. And I remember when my boys were young, I used to say it's a bit like Star Wars. We're on the side of the Force, and we're fighting Darth Vader and the darkness and evil. And I think sometimes we forget that there is darkness in the world. And it doesn't have to be so.
That really ties so much in with the teachings of the Aetherius Society. And yeah, I hear so many similarities. And I don't know about the story of Dr. King. I know about the story of Jesus and Buddha, but maybe you could just give us a short synopsis of the life of Zoroaster.
Well, he was born into a priestly family in North Iran. They think it was North Iran area. And at the age of 30, just like Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha, he went away and meditated and came back with a glowing light around him, as they did, as all the great avatars and people have come to this universe to guide us and to rekindle our fire of goodness. And he taught, what was so revolutionary was that up to then, most people were polytheistic and they would worship all the elements, they'd worship everything. to keep in with everybody, and they didn't want to alienate themselves from any gods. But Zoroaster said that there was one almighty, I don't think the word is God, but one almighty energy force. And that energy force had allowed evil to be in the world. And it was our pleasure to fight that evil in its many forms that we see in the world around us, you know, greed or ignorance or prejudice or selfishness or whatever it is. And it was very simple. And he wrote, his words are in the Gathas, which were poems. So he was a great poet as well. And if you read the Gathas, it just all makes sense to you. It's simple. It's about righteousness, which doesn't seem to be a very popular word these days, but righteousness is important. Doing the right thing at the right time in the right place and using your own intellect and your own being to change things. So it's very simple. And yes, we've got a lot of connections with your society. I was just thinking, I was reading about Dr. King, and I was just thinking that, you know, many of us see ourselves as 60-volt light bulbs, and we can light up a room. And you know a person that comes into the room that can light it up. But I see him as a sort of 60-watt laser beam that is trying to illuminate the whole universe, the moon. And the power of a laser beam, you know, it just has to be 60 volts and you can actually see the moon. And I think he's of that category of person. So that's what I see. And I just think that whoever comes, the great avatars, the great religious readers, the great thinkers, they all say the same thing. You know, so they're not saying something different. They're all saying you have to respect yourself, respect the environment, and respect other people.
Well, I really hear you on that. Yeah, these we in the society believe they're all cosmic masters, these great teachers. So they've come from other worlds to teach us, and it's quite common these days. People say, "Oh, I'm a star seed, or this is my first incarnation, or I'm from the Pleiades or wherever." But the people that really are, they stand out, like you say, like a laser beam. You know, they leave followers for 600,000 years or whatever. Or it's day and night between normal men and these god men, no?
Yes. And they're god women as well.
God women, yeah.
And one of the things that was so extraordinary about Zoroaster was that he preached equality all those years back. So he, in the Gathas, he says, men and women, use your own mind, your own conscience. So he always talks about men and women as equal. And I think we've forgotten that. I think we're just relearning it. I always say that he was the earliest feminist. And I think it's really important. And often people say Zoroastrians are the first green religion, Zoroastrianism, because we put such emphasis on not polluting the environment. So we respect fire because fire cleanses all pollution, and it also symbolizes light and warmth and purity. When we die, we don't bury our bodies, and we don't pollute it in the fire. We take it to a place called the Tower of Silence, which is away from habitation, on a high area, and it has a wall around it, and we leave the bodies for vultures. So we say we come into the world naked, we go out naked, and we put a huge emphasis, Zoroastrianism, on charity. So if in life you have not done charity, in death you do charity to the birds. Yeah. And it's a very important lesson that people learn, I think, you know. And I'm very proud to be a Zoroastrian, and the Zoroastrians in India are called Parsis, people from Persia. And there's a saying in India, Parsi, thy name is charity. And you'll see that all the great, huge trust funds around the world are all started by Parsis. And Forbes magazine has just said that the greatest philanthropist that ever lived was Sir Jamshedji Jiji Boy. Sir Jamshedji Jiji Boy was a great philanthropist, and he was the first Indian to be knighted by Queen Victoria because of his charities. And he did charities not in just in India and Hong Kong, but also in Ireland when they had the famine. He was one of the great donors to the Irish famine. He was also a great donor to the French floods. But the greatest ever was Sir Jamshedji Tata, who then went on to start the Tata Empire. And they say that he's given, I think it's $104 billion in 1 year for charity. And the big trust funds around the world are now run by the Tata Trust. And you'll see, it is just extraordinary. So, you know, cry your heart out, Bill Gates and all the rest of them, because this is just an example. But a great part of our faith is about no fear of making money. We're not Puritans. We believe that you can make money, but it has to be used for the good of other people. And when you have, you know, when you create empires, you have to look after your workforce. And they did. I mean, they were remarkable people. They are remarkable people still.
I've been speaking to Deborah about this, and she's been blown away by she wishes she could join. Is it true that you have to be born into the religion and that you can't leave? But if you do leave, you're blessed anyway.
No, you can leave. Nobody says you can't leave. Mm-hmm. But of course, Zoroaster couldn't have said people had to be born into the religion. He must have converted. But we don't take converts. And I think it's happened for two reasons. When Islam went through the Middle East and conquered Persia, most people converted to Islam. There were a few areas where Zoroastrians survived, in Yazd and in Kerman in Iran. And of course, they couldn't convert anybody, and they had to pay a special tax. And life was terrible in Iran because you had to convert to Islam. Some of them went as refugees to India and created empires there. And again, they were among Hindus, and Hindus have a caste system. So we never converted anybody, and we agreed that we would stay in our own group. So through that, we never converted, and we never accepted other people to join us. So, you know, my boys might have 50% DNA of Zoroastrianism in them. And my eldest, Mark, did his postgraduate degree in Zoroastrianism at SOAS. But they have to go through initiation, which is called the Naujot, which is when you learn your prayers. It's a bit like a bar mitzvah in the Jewish religion. And it's a great controversy at the moment whether we will take converts or don't take converts. But I can't see millions of people wanting to convert. Ooh. I think there'll be one or two academics that are interested. So it's not really much of an issue. And anyway, the religion's only about living a good life. So you can do that as a Zoroastrian or as anything. It's just a label.
Well, it's fascinating listening to you. And thank you for sending me this book, which is the Z2A. And I went through it, and I've got all these little tickers. I don't know if you can see loads of little tickies going through. I must talk about that. Must ask Sabrina about that. Must do this. Because when I read it for the third time, I was so inspired. But it was almost like my own personal story was like I was looking for this religion all my life. And it's almost like I was chasing around looking for it. But if I had found it, I couldn't have converted to it for all the reasons you've just said. And so then I get to 2013, having gone so many U-turns and so many thousands of pounds that I really couldn't afford to spend looking for truth. And I found the Aetherius Society. And it seems to me that I was looking for your religion. And because that wasn't open to me, I found the Aetherius Society. Because when I hear you, when I read this, it's just lined up. So you may have the, you're not taking anybody in, and Aetherius Society is like, come on everybody. This is the truth, and the truth is this, and we need to live a good life, and the earth is a living, breathing creature, and we need to treat her well. We need to treat everybody well. We need to understand that we are all here together. And so for me, this is it brings a lump to my throat. I do want you to go through Cirrus the Great for me. Could you just tell our in very brief form what he did, which was so different at the time?
Cirrus the Great. Well, first of all, I've been very moved by what you said, and my only comment on that is that Zoroastrianism is only a guideline of how to live a good life. And you're obviously living a good life. It doesn't matter what the label is. It doesn't matter. You know, if you think you're a Zoroastrian, you're a Zoroastrian. It's wonderful. I mean, I would love you to come to the Zoroastrian Center, the World Zoroastrian Center in Feltham, Freddie Mercury close, Freddie Mercury being a Zoroastrian. And you can come anytime. I'm the president, and we'd love to see you. Absolutely love to see you.
I think I shared with you, Savannah, that I lived in Feltham.
I know, from 1970. Very odd.
So I moved into Feltham when I was 11 in 1970. And I actually, when I got married, which was in 1984, I moved to the street immediately behind Freddie Mercury's home. And if you was to walk from my house to his mum's house, you know, if I could have gone straight there, it would have been less than 75 yards. Well, I mean, and it's almost like I was just like following, looking, searching, that whole gravitation. And, you know, when I'd moved from Feltham, that's when you guys moved into to Bridge House. And I didn't know about it until just a few months ago.
Everything happens at the right time for you to grow. So you don't have to have any regrets. And I always believe there's huge karmic connections. The people meet up at the right time to do the right things together. I will go back to Cyrus the Great. Cyrus the Great was a Zoroastrian king. And he was the first person to be called great. And I'll tell you why he was great. If you, in the Bible, I have to say most people are seen as Philistines and all have a very bad press, except for Cyrus, who's called the King of Kings, God's anointed in Ezra. And the reason being is that when Cyrus created the great Persian Empire, which was the largest empire at that time the world had ever seen, he had the Cyrus cylinder made in three different languages, dead languages now, explaining that people were allowed to worship whatever gods they wished. It was up to them. He was a Zoroastrian, but he would not force his faith on them. And of course, when he liberated the Jews from Babylon, where they were slaves, he allowed them to go back to Israel, and he told them to rebuild the temple, and he paid for the building of the temple. And when the temple wasn't finished, his son, Darius, carried on and paid for the temple to be built. And that's why Zoroastrians are held in high esteem by the Jewish community. And of course, they took a lot of our ideas on board. So the concept of heaven and hell comes from Zoroastrianism, the concept of the one God, the concept of the day of judgment, that you will be judged. It's very important that that your deeds will be, and your thoughts and your words will all be judged. And all this was taken on by Judaism and then by Christianity and also by Islam. So the concept of praying five times a day came from Zoroastrianism, and that there's so many things that has quietly infiltrated to different religions. And it's only happened because of generosity of spirit. If we tried to force people to have taken on our ideas, I don't think we would have got very far. And I was just thinking before this program, it's very interesting that the Roman Empire believed in Zeus and Juno and all those gods and goddesses that were really a bunch of weirdos and not very nice, very nice gods. But who worships Zeus now? Nobody. And yet our religion is still going, even if it's very few people. But I know that when I go to other religious interfaith organizations and I go to other faith functions, so much of what is the foundations of their faith comes from Zoroastrianism. And that's very important. Well, it's very important for me. And I think it's quite interesting that the truth is what it's really about. And the Romans used to always say about Zoroastrians, Persians were the only people that the Romans never conquered. They couldn't conquer the Persians. And they used to say the Persian father trained all their children to be great riders. They were all able to turn around and shoot at 90 degrees, which the Romans couldn't understand. And the third thing was they brought their children up to tell the truth. They weren't allowed to lie. Lie was seen as dirge, which is evil. So they were always truthful, and the Romans found that fascinating.
Yes. So
I think quite a lot of the basis of the religion is about truth and being honest and being straightforward, and I think that's important.
And that echoes so well, doesn't it, with Dr. King's? He would always say, to find truth, you have to speak truth.
Yes.
And live truth. It's and that's all that really matters. And in fact, that is what matters. And yet it gets sort of shoved under the carpet so often that to embellish a story is almost like applauded in our society. And yet what that actually is just telling fibs.
I mean, our society has got sort of collective insanity at the moment. I mean, we admire people who are so greedy and vile and just want to show off their wealth. I mean, it embarrasses me to think that the richest man in India has spent building his house more than the whole GDP of Somalia, it's appalling that 1% of the world is owned, 1% of the world's rich own half the world's resources. I mean, this is collective insanity that we allow this to go on, and we do. I used to be director of Anti-Slavery International, and I tried to show people that what I thought was really important is, we know through the UN there's a minimum of 120 million people, and half of those are children in slavery at the moment. So that's double the population of England in slavery. And they're forced to cut down forests, to do this terrible farming, to work in the mines, to work in factories, to work in brothels. And it's they're being forced to destroy our planet. And Zoroastrians never had slavery, because we said slavery wasn't possible. If you said to people, you have free will, slaves don't have free will. They're forced to do evil, and we allow it to happen. We could stop it overnight if we wanted to, but what we do is we want to be greedy, so we want a cheap carpet. So we're happy to see children sitting next to each other like battery hens, making carpets so that we can have it cheaply. We should just say to ourselves, we're going to pay the going rate of what it costs to make a beautiful Persian carpet or Afghan carpet, but we don't. So, we've got a lot to answer for as human beings. And but everything can change very quickly. If we want it to change, it can change very quickly. But we have to have the mindset and the will. And we could have politicians and leaders who have some moral compass at the moment. All around the world, we've got people who've got no moral compass, and we're admiring them, and we're putting them up as people we should be following. Well, I don't think so. I think it's appalling, you know. But I think there's a lot of people in the world who feel like that, but they feel powerless. But they shouldn't feel powerless because, you know, one person can change everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, we've always had rulers throughout the years, but, you know, we think we have all this freedom now because we, you know, we all have we have the internet and we can travel, but we just put ourselves in prisons as well, even if we're not physically enslaved. We're mentally enslaved to checking our news feed and other people do our thinking for us. You know?
Absolutely. It's, and we don't even question them. It just comes through the news. And it's appalling. We don't question anything. We just take it and we just think, yes, we've got to make money. We've got to have a house. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. I mean, when we were young, I cannot tell you that I ever went on a holiday with both my parents because my parents used to work running a hotel. But now if people don't have, I mean, even on half term, they have to have holidays. You know, you know, it used to be the summer holiday. Now it's a holiday all the time, you know, perpetual holiday. And people are going through terrible strain. You know, they don't have the money, but they have to do it because other people are doing it. We've got a long way to go in this world.
Yeah, 2 points come to me, and I've been trying to think of the reference to this. I'm going to have to just give it as a generalization. Yes. There was that some people were rebelling against, some nation was rebelling against France, who was like the rulers of them, and they were unkind. And because they weren't being treated properly, the French then were dropping bombs on them or some awful thing. And somebody, some very wise person said the way that you would control, if you wanted to control, or to get people to work with you, but not to drop bombs, but to drop food, because these people are hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to feed them, and then you don't need to control them because they would want to work with you. And that's sort of, you know, just listening to you, that is sort of so fundamental. If you make people so downtrodden and so restricted that they feel they have to go to desperate measures to fight back. Whereas you show kindness to people, you never have the problem in the first place, which is what I think that the whole ethos of what you're explaining and what we are taught within the society, that, yes, you just have to be kind. You have to be sensible. You have to use your resources compassionately, and you have to share that message and be a way shower. There's no point in just saying it and sitting there waiting for somebody else to do it. No, we all have to take our little part, and we have to walk forward with that banner. I think it's just, I'm hopeful that we're actually getting to the stage now that more and more people are able to hear this message and see the sense of it, because it's, well, as you said, everything else is insanity, because we are all one. We need to just get on this, you know, get on together and work together to,
Planet
back up.
I mean, I believe the greatest wisdom is kindness. I mean, really, that is the greatest wisdom. And of course, I mean, just look at the Middle East now. I mean, you know, it's, You can't go on killing people, you know, and you're just, both sides are giving bad examples to their young. When I was very young, I was a volunteer for the homeless charity Shelter And then I became the London organizer. But it started with me as a young person thinking, well, if somebody's homeless, you can help them. But really, the homeless should be helping themselves. And so I worked with the homeless to start shelter shops. And they went and collected. They ran the shops. This was before the Big Issue magazine. And I think that's the way forward, that if you are disadvantaged, then you have to work with your group and with other people to get things done, to change it. And it can be done, but we are also fed by the media that we can't do anything. We are fed by this, you know, it's run by, you know, 85 people controlling all the great industries and money in the world. And we think, well, that's fine. It's not fine. But we're not allowed to say that. We're not allowed to say that. We've got to fit into the hierarchy and the media, you know, looking at somebody spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds on buying a watch. Well, they could buy an ordinary watch. It'll make no difference. And it's supposed to somehow make a difference, you know, that they've got an expensive watch. It's just nonsense. It's all nonsense, and we're being fed this rubbish, and we eat rubbish, but we're fed rubbish food instead of having, you know, if you go to the shops, you can buy beautiful vegetables, you can grow vegetables yourself, and you know, and be healthy. But we're fed rubbish. We're given rubbish on television. I mean, it's now a joke in our family. We say there's absolutely nothing every day on television to watch. Nothing to watch. It's all rubbish. And every night, from 9 o'clock onwards, you've got some program which is a murder, a vile murder, somebody being cut up and slaughtered, and you watch it before going to sleep, which is the worst thing anybody can do, before they have their dreams and sleeping period to rest and to be creative in the mind. They're fed with this violence, and we just allow it to go on. I think somewhere somebody's got to crack it. But I'm on the way out. I'm an old lady now, and that's it. I feel like, I always get involved.
Because you've had so many years of experience. I mean, people listening to this saying, yeah, I should go and volunteer in a shelter, or I should go and do this. Yeah, I really should, you know, I'll do it tomorrow. Okay. But what are small steps people can take to help?
I mean, you can make a difference, you know, just helping somebody cross the road. Just, you know, I mean, little things. You don't have to do great big things all the time. Mother Teresa used to say that, you know, little things are important as well to show love, as well as being some great heroine. You don't know what to be great heroines, and you know, but it all adds up. And you could see yourself as a catalyst for great change. You know, just a small community around you, you can impact on it. And it just takes time. You know, you have to think about it. You have to use your brain a little bit. You have to think, well, what is needed? Well, somebody might want a tree planted, you know. Mm. Somebody might want their shopping done. Or you could get together with a lot of people and say, look, I we don't like this. We want to do something better. We want to make the environment beautiful. I mean, when we have young people at the Asher Centre in the Forest of Dean that I started, and we were the main provider for Erasmus Plus education for the European Union. So we had people from all over the world, and we have the most beautiful grounds, and it's in the forest, and it's beautiful. And a lot of the young people used to just walk and just throw the litter on the ground. And then they said, hello, they used to love the Asher Centre. And I said to them, when you're walking, what does it take just to pick up litter? What does it take to make sure when the apples fall off the tree that you don't pick them up and you cut them and you cook them for people instead of just chucking them away? It's just that bit of thought, you know. But it's difficult. You have to teach people. Mm. You have to teach them from when they're very young that they are responsible for their environment. They're responsible to make themselves happy and to make other people happy. And they're responsible to cherish the environment and make it beautiful. Because often we have very ugly places. So one of the things when I started the Asher Center in the Forest of Dean was, I said to everybody, it's going to be a very, very beautiful place. I am sick of young people going to motels and conference centers. You go into these places, you can't breathe because there's no energy moving. It's high. They close the windows. They have central heating. You can't breathe. And they're ugly places. And we don't need to inspire ourselves with ugly places. There's no need for it. It's an ugly mindset. And it's most probably somebody making a lot of money and couldn't care less.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just little things like when we have dinner, we put flowers on tables from our gardens and everybody notices it. It makes them feel happy. It's so easy.
Yeah, doctor, we do a lot of practices in this society, you know, pranayama, mantra. But Dr. King says, you know, if your neighbor needs help cutting the grass, or with their shopping, then you stop that and you do that, because, you know, especially in the new age, people are taught to do meditation and, you know, hours of contemplation, but it's selfless service. This is the age of action. This is the Aquarian age. And also we do a lot of prayers because we're in a spiritual energy crisis. As many people, you know, obviously you should do materialistic help as well. And there's plenty of time for that. And there's many people willing to do it, but there is also the need for prayer. And we do a lot of operations with spiritual energy, putting in batteries, releasing it into when there's times of crisis, because, you know, we're spiritual beings having a materialistic experience, not the other way around. And so that's also something that people can do. Anyone can sit down and pray. You know, prayer is our superpower. I know Deborah has a lot of experience as firsthand of this as well.
Well, absolutely, you know, more in heaven and earth ratio that you ever dreamt of in your philosophy. And I know that prayer is very, very powerful. And I told Deborah that last weekend I went on pilgrimage to Walsingham in North Norfolk, which was the initial place of Our Lady, the Virgin, was worshipped in England. And of course, the abbey was destroyed by the psychopath Henry VIII. And I went there to say thank you to her. And prayers are very, very important. And we know scientifically that if a group of people come together and pray, it has an impact. And I remember meeting the Maharishi Yogi, and he used to always say that if there's 1,000 people in each country of the world praying at the same time, the impact would be tremendous. But they couldn't get 1,000 people. And I made them all laugh by saying, well, what you should do is get all the OAPs, look after them, feed them, and make them all pray nonstop.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's a great idea. Yeah. But I mean, we could do it. And prayers are answered. Prayers are answered. There is whole hierarchies. That was another thing that Zoroaster brought to the world, was the concept of the hierarchy of angels. That they're beings outside us that are there to help us. And I was telling Deborah that I went on when I wanted to start the Asher Foundation, and I wanted to have a center for young people in England, I went on a pilgrimage in India. And they say that if you go to 8 Atash Berams, which are the holy fire temples, but you have to do it in less than 48 hours, which is not really possible because they're so far apart. But I organized with my two aunts that we would get taxis to pick us up at each of the places of pilgrimage. And we did it in the time, but I passed out and had to go to hospital. I was so ill, but the stress of it was so terrible. But the first fire temple we went to, I was praying and I came out and I knew that I had two guardian angels either side of me. I'd experienced bliss, and my whole being had changed, because when I came out of the fire temple, my eldest son was in the car because he couldn't go in as a non-Zoroastrian. And he said to me, what happened? And I said, I was in the presence of two guardian angels. And he said, I can see that by just looking at you, that something has happened. Your whole being has changed. So I am very sure that there are angels there and we should call upon them when we need them, because I think they want to help us. And I think we've forgotten that. And I think Dr. King was telling everybody that.
The magic of Dr. King on the prayers is that, as you've just said, if they needed 1,000 people praying at the same time, and that's really hard to orchestrate. So he, because he was able to understand how to harness spiritual energy, he's managed within Operation Prayer Power that we can go, a bit like a blood bank, if you want, we go and we fill up the spiritual energy batteries by invoking prayer energy out through our hearts and on the palms of our hands to fill up these batteries, which we then can transmit to anywhere in the world that needs it. So it could be for an environmental disaster, it could be to help peace talks, wherever it's needed. But we can do it like the laser that you identified that Dr. King was. We can, with the equipment that he has bequeathed to us, that he invented, we actually do that now as a regular thing, as service to the world. And I am so proud to be a part of that. So proud to be able to go and do my little bit, put my little my prayer energy into that battery, knowing it will be saved to the moment where it will be joined with all the other people that have prayed within that battery to send it out. So the 1,000 people praying get it, that's a reality. And for that, I am, well, grateful beyond words. So I haven't got the words. It's just wonderful. And that's what we need to get out to the masses, because we call that a cosmic mission. We can, and we offer it to anybody that wants to come and do that with a little bit of training on mantra. Anybody can help. And why wouldn't they want to?
I mean, that should be your mission. You should make sure that you do that, because to me, it's very moving, and it's absolutely, lots of people could do it. Anybody could do it from their house. I mean, you know, old people's homes, they say, oh, we're so bored, we don't know what to do. If they did that and they knew that they were an inspiration to the next generation. I mean, even in schools, I mean, when I was young, nobody spoke about meditation. Nobody spoke about mindfulness. Now, lots of schools do mindfulness. So this could be something that even schools do. But I'm very happy to work with your organization to make this happen. We go around all the schools and we say, it has to be a visual so people can understand a battery. So like having, charging your car, you charge yourself and you charge the universe. It has to be something very, inverted commas, sexy. But we can do that. We can think of how to do that. And we go to all the schools and old people's homes, young and old, and start with them. The people who've got the time and the people who must be doing it through their lifetime. And I'm very happy to help with that. I'm very happy. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a brilliant idea.
I thought you were retiring.
Yeah, where did that old lady go, Jack?
Yeah,
that old lady.
No, I remember her saying, "My time is almost up."
My time, just before I go to the old people's.
you're a dynamo. I know you just couldn't stop. I mean,
I'm being very serious. If you want to do that, we can get lots of people to do it. And I think this could be something that could be an interfaith of all the good organizations, you know, like yourselves, people who are, inverted commas, evolved souls. We could do it. Okay?
Well, we need to get
in your court, and I will help. I will help with all my networks. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
I know there's one more thing I've got to do before I... go away and keep quiet.
Going out. She's going again. I don't understand.
Well, the what we have here is that it's a physical battery, so you have to physically get there to do the operation prayer power. But from what you've just sparked in my mind is, why don't we go to the local schools where they could come in and we train the children to do that? Wow. So we start within Fulham, we start within LA, we start where we've got 5 batteries around the world at the moment, and we could very much...
Where are they?
We've got one in Fulham, one in Barnsley, one in New Zealand, one in Detroit. Is it Detroit? I get a little bit confused. Michigan.
Michigan.
And then one in... Did I already say Los Angeles? I don't know whether I did.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, so that's the 5 batteries that we have. But actually, to get that vibrant child energy into those batteries, that would just be so, whoa, I want to hug you.
I can use all my I've been called a cosmic networker. I've got a lot of networks of really good people, and I think people would be interested because it just takes their time. And also once they start doing it, they'll realize how good they feel. They'll feel energized. They'll feel energized. Well, I'm very happy to join in. This is why we had to meet. I don't know how you heard about me, but anyway. Okay, let's go for it. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. We know what we've got to do and we do it. I don't know who are your people.
After the show. We'll.
Yeah, keep in contact and we will make a plan.
I mean, for example, there is no reason why we can't, with the Zoroastrians, there's no reason why we can't at all the fire temples to have say to them that you have to go there for your prayers to put the energy. There's no reason why every synagogue, every church can't do it. I mean, initially they'll be nervous. They'll think you're trying to take them over. But when they know that you're not taking them over and it's cosmic and it's for everybody, it's for the collective good, it'll happen. It'll happen. Maybe this is why we're doing this. Goodness knows why. Because I don't normally do programs.
Okay, well,
you just have to tell me what you want me to do and give. I'm a foot soldier. I'm a warrior soldier. So you tell me what to do and I will do my bit.
Oh, I'm feeling emotional. So emotional now.
No, I mean, all these religious leaders have all said about the power of prayer. We all know it.
Yeah.
And I mean, all these churches, we went today to look at a house for a friend of ours, and there was a church there, but I mean, it was obviously nobody goes there, you know. And I was wondering why are there all these churches and nobody goes anywhere? I mean, they could actually be huge hubs of energy because they're in every single village.
The Shape Power temples, yeah, they're generous.
They're all there. I'm sure the Baha'i community would be interested. I'm sure the Jains would. I mean, I can talk to all the interfaith people. I'm one of the patrons of United Religions. I'm very involved with interfaith. And of course,
Deborah, come off the ceiling. Deborah.
Pardon?
Come off the ceiling.
What do you think, Deborah?
I'm thinking we need to continue this conversation and get a plan in place. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, just you can ring me anytime. You've got my number. You know where I am. WhatsApp me. You can ring me day or night. And I think this is why we're supposed to be, why we're meeting, okay? This is why we're supposed to be meeting. And I think it'll be absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Good. It's a good job we're not recording videos or everyone would see my tears. Mm. So,
Do you want to ask me anything else?
I do, but we've run out of time and I think just want to end on this wonderful high, because, you know, where can we go from here? So you're just going to have to come back on the show again and we'll talk more. But Yeah.
It's been lovely. It's been lovely seeing both of you. And I know that, okay, what's the date today?
The third.
Yep. Okay, 3rd of November. Fantastic. And it's good. It's Friday. It's a Venus day. So it's a day of beauty and femininity and the feminine energy with the prayers will be fabulous. Okay?
Good.
And also, it's very interesting. Venus is the planet of Jews. And it's a Zoroastrian planet. We've got Rahu and Venus, but the Jews are Venus, which means beauty, money, cinema, theater, silver and gold. And I think we could start maybe with you know, the Middle East.
Of course.
And
yeah.
We're told, aren't we, Jack, that Jesus and Buddha both came from Venus, ascended masters, cosmic masters from Venus. So that fits in perfectly.
Yeah. It's for Jesus, it's fantastic. Friday. And it's the day that he suffered as well. So I think it'd be wonderful. The 3rd of November, and we go for it. You have to think between yourselves, because I don't know your organization. But I'm very happy to come and see you wherever you all are.
Maybe that's the best next step, is if you could
come. I'm very happy to come. I mean, I can easily get to Fulham.
You're in London.
I can easily get to Fulham.
Well, let's
Fulham
do that.
Fulham is easy. I mean, how far are you all from Fulham?
Well, me, I can, no problem. That's it's on the train. So that's, I go up to Fulham quite often. So that is not, that's not an issue. I will have a word with the powers that be in Fulham and we will arrange something. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Really, it's been really absolute, thank you so much.
No, absolute pleasure. And I will do the interface stuff, okay?
Thank you.
That's easy for me because I know them all. So I can do that. And I think but I have to understand what the battery is. And then when I understand what the battery is, then everybody is working on batteries now. So it's quite clever.
Yeah.
it's just quite clever because, you know, everybody wants to have a battery car and a battery this, that, and the other.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It could be very trendy. You know, yes. I mean, we've got to be trendy. We've got to be a little bit sexy to get people on board. I'm going for a cup of tea.
All right, I'm going for a lie down.
I'm just waiting. Jack and Deborah, you have to contact me anytime, and then we'll go for it, okay?
Okay, but thank you. Bless you.
Bless you. Bye-bye, darlings. Shall I close this off now?
Yes, please, yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.